Charting Toward Intimacy covers mature topics. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Charting Toward Intimacy,
where we're expanding the conversation around Catholic sexuality.
I'm Ellen.
And I'm Kathleen.
Welcome to the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Charting Toward Intimacy. We are excited to get into this topic. I've actually been personally anticipating this podcast episode for like several weeks now, actually, because we had a little break from recording, and like normally we record once a week, but like I had to take a week off, and like, so I've like literally been thinking about this episode for like 3 weeks now.
I love it.
Oh man. We're talking about evaluating human action. The church in her wisdom has a very specific process for evaluating the morality of actions. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is something that's going to be really helpful for those of you. Like, I just, a lot of times I get questions of like, is this okay? Is this okay? How do I know? You know, why doesn't the church have a list of rules for like what things are okay and not okay? Well, the church doesn't have a list of rules because there's an infinite number of things that can exist. And as we'll get into this process, like, it's very nuanced in certain situations. And so we'll get into like what the church has instead of a list of rules.
There we go. Perfect.
But before we get started, we will answer a listener question. Remember, we do have an open question box. If you ever want your question to be featured, you are welcome to put in that open question box. We'll also occasionally throw in questions from Instagram. This is actually a question from Instagram that was in one of those question boxes I do on Instagram, but I wasn't able to give it like enough background. You know, I get like maybe 100 words. Oh, not even. What am I talking about? Like maybe like 50 words can like fit on a slide. Yeah. And like that is not enough for some of these questions. Okay. So the question was, how do I tell my husband that I don't like the way he initiates? And it makes me feel objectified. Here's the thing.
Here is the thing.
You kind of just need to tell him that.
It's like ripping off a Band-Aid.
Yeah. And this is something that is very hard. Like, I don't want to discount the fact that talking about, especially when it is criticism, talking about sex is really, really hard. I mean, like, we just had an episode about talking about sex. Maybe go back and listen to that one about how, you know, if you like incorporate it into daily conversation, it can be easier to broach these subjects. But if there is something, especially if it is the case of like making you feel objectified, if there's something that your husband is doing that's making you feel objectified, you should not be allowing that, truly. I mean, yes, like, I don't know your situation. I don't know your relationship, but you should never feel objectified as a human. Like, that's objectification, turning you into an object, is not love. It's not true love. And so, you know, I think when it comes to talking about these things, just finding a good time, you know, make sure that emotion levels are at a nice base level, you know, emotions aren't already high. Don't bring this up in the middle of like an argument about who didn't unload the dishwasher, right? And then be like, well, I also hate the way you initiate.
Right. Well, and the other thing I was going to say about timing is, you know, I wouldn't recommend doing it before you guys are planning to have sex, right? Like, that's probably not a good time, because it can take like this excitement level for your husband down to this like, oh, wait a minute. Like, you know, like, you don't want to be criticized right before you kind of have sex, right? Maybe do it during like when you start your period, right? Or maybe when you enter your ovulatory phase, if you're abstaining or avoiding, right? Yeah. Like, like a time where you know you're not about to enter into it, right? But actually a time where you have the space to take a day or so and just be kind of like, yeah, you know, we can think about this before we're intimate again, right?
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, that might just the timing of it is very important. That's probably the number one thing. Like, and expect some pushback.
Yes.
Don't expect it to be this like productive conversation necessarily. Expect a little bit of hurt. And do it in charity, like always in charity, right? Maybe make sure you're saying, okay, these are the things, like, this is the thing I don't really like, but these are the things you do that I do really like, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe pepper it as well with some compliments and some affirmation. Like, I really like these things, but I just thought it would be helpful for us, you know, in the future to know that I don't like, this is how I feel when you do this particular thing.
Yeah. And explain your why. Why is it making you feel that way? And then also ask his why. You know, can you tell me why you initiate like this? You know, and maybe find that out before you explain like how it makes you feel. And that way you can say like, okay, I see what you mean, but the thing is this aspect of it makes me feel objectified. So, you know, can we take that same why, the reason you like like initiating this way, but can we change it to something else so that you can still have that you like, but just in a way that I also like?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really
we could have a whole podcast episode about initiating, and I'm sure we will very soon. But I think for now we should get into the episode topic.
Let's do it.
or else we're gonna go too far. Okay. Evaluating human action. I'm like so excited to talk about this topic.
This is one where you need to turn your gain down again.
I know. Maybe I should have. I can edit in post projection. I can turn my volume
down.
There
you go.
Okay. So evaluating human action, there are three constitutive elements to it. The first one, the primary one, the one that is like the most black and white is the moral object. We'll talk about what that means in a second. I'm just going to lay out the outline for you guys first. The second thing, which is like secondary, is the personal and further intention of the action. So this shapes the personal and further intention shapes the moral conduct of the action. And then the third thing is circumstances. And so the circumstances like kind of add additional color to the situation. This is the order that things are evaluated in. Okay, so let's talk about moral object. What's moral object? This is literally like pretty black and white, except it also has two parts to it that are a little nuanced. And this is why we're taking an entire episode to explain this, because
it's important.
Evaluating human action is extremely nuanced.
Yeah.
Except in the very first part. This is where it's not nuanced. Okay. So there's two parts to the moral object. There is the material dimension, and then there is the formal or intentional dimension. These two parts can't be separated. They inform each other, they limit each other. So that's why it's like together in here. So the question that you ask in this first part is, what are you doing morally speaking? What is the just action? What is this action?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take something like super simple. I take my hand and touch Kathleen's cheek. Okay. That action is like basically morally neutral. Like, right. There's just, I touched her cheek.
Yeah.
Now with the formal intentional dimension of it, I could be touching her cheek to, I don't know. I guess it's like she was my daughter. I should have done this with like, no, that's actually worse.
Yeah.
I think you see where this is going.
Yeah, I do. I do.
All right. I could be like caressing her cheek. That would be the formal intention of it, is that it's like this soft touch, right? I could slap her. Mm-hmm. The formal dimension of it is like pain.
Right.
So, you know, the same material dimension, touching her cheek, can have different formal dimension, intentional dimensions.
Yeah.
And that kind of sets the differences there. Okay. All right. So let's keep talking about the moral object, because there's more. Yeah. There's more.
That's not all, friends.
Okay. So the moral object relies on exact definitions of what constitutes a particular moral act. So what that means, you're like, excuse me.
Layman's say terms, that again. Please. Yeah.
It means that actions are either morally good or morally bad. Or there's some dispute within the moral theological world that there are morally neutral actions. And so for the sake of that, we'll say that there are morally good, morally neutral, and morally bad actions. Mm-hmm. All right. If the moral object is determined to be bad, meaning that it is an intrinsic evil, then the act is always, always considered morally wrong, no matter the second two parts of evaluating moral action, which is intention and circumstances. If the act is considered morally wrong, it is always determined to be bad.
Yeah.
So what that means is that the ends do not ever justify the means of an action.
Yeah.
So let's take the example of masturbation.
There we go.
Woohoo! Let's jump in.
Let's just dig in. Yeah.
Why not? So the man's penis has both a procreative and a pleasure function to it. Those are inherently connected. Mm-hmm. The orgasm goes right alongside with ejaculation. Okay, yes, there are men who have painstakingly taught themselves how to orgasm without ejaculation. That is so the minority. That is not the design. I don't even want to get into that.
Right.
We're talking about the design.
Yeah.
Is that ejaculation, the procreative aspect, goes right alongside with the orgasm. They go together. That means like also, you know, let's take a step to the side. Sex, unity, and procreation go together. They can't be separated. They are inherent parts of the act. What the man's body is teaching us is that particular aspect of sex, right? The fact mm-hmm. that the man's pleasure, which is part of the unitive element of sex, goes right alongside with the procreative aspect, that is teaching us that it goes with sex. Unlike intercourse, right? It has to be connected. All right. So ejaculation outside of the woman, therefore, like purposeful, we're not talking about accidental right now, purposeful ejaculation outside of the woman's body is an intrinsic evil. It is a morally wrong act because of the inherent connection of the unitive and procreative elements in both sex itself and in how the man's body works. Mm-hmm. No matter the circumstances, if that happens purposefully, it is a morally like wrong. It is morally bad. And that's like, I mean, that's just, I think sometimes some of us might still be sitting in that spot.
Yeah.
And wanting the intention to change the action. But that's impossible to do for a morally bad, like an intrinsic evil is what it is.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the personal further intention. So this is the second part. So again, we've got the moral object, and then we've got the personal and further intention, and then we've got the circumstances. All right. So the question with this part is, why are you doing the action? We can have good intention and we can have bad intentions. So if we've gotten to this question, we've already answered that the action, the moral object, is either neutral or good. Mm-hmm. And so because if it's bad, if it's an intrinsic evil, then we don't even have to go further into evaluating the action because no circumstances are going to change that. All right. So whatever this action is, and we'll get to more examples in a little bit. So your intention for the action can change the outcome of the morality of the action. You can also have multiple intentions, which we get even more nuanced into how that affects the moral object. Yeah. This is why we're taking an entire episode for this, is like, it's so nuanced. All right. So there's also like objective and subjective aspects of intention too. Yeah. And so something that's really, really important just when it comes to living a Christian life is that we need to continually pray to purify our intentions. Because again, like, evaluating human action is so nuanced in intention that we can even convince ourselves that we have a good intention. And in fact, it actually be very colored by selfish reasons. And even we may not even realize that this human action is actually bad, morally speaking, because like we've convinced ourselves that our intentions are actually good. So that's just really important.
That's a really good point.
Okay. Yeah. So let's take something like super simple, almsgiving, right? Donating. That is a good moral object. Our intentions can change the like good or badness of almsgiving, right? It is objective that giving money to a charity is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But if we're doing it to get our name up on that placard or to show off how much money we have or things like that, those color that personal and further intention, color the moral action.
Yeah.
And so that's what I mean by like, we need to pray to purify our intentions. We need to ask God to help us purify our intentions because, you know, like, you can still give money and have your name on the placard, like, and it still be morally good for you, so long as like your intention is pure. And that's something that like God's going to work with you on, like that.
Yeah.
You can't white knuckle your way through purifying your intentions.
Right, yeah.
It's true. Oh man. Kathleen, I've been like talking a lot. Do you have any thoughts?
No, honestly, like, you've got the breakdown here, and I'm enjoying just following along at the moment.
Awesome.
You've got the breakdown. I will chime in when and if I feel necessary, but I feel like I'm learning along with everybody else today.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, honestly, when I was being walked through this myself, there are so many notes in my notebook. I'm like literally going through a notebook from one of my classes and just like laying this out for you guys, because I was just like, this is incredible.
Yeah. No, it's really, really good. And it's important.
All right. So the last the last step in evaluating morality of a human action is circumstances. This is the who, what, when, where, how, and to what degree of the situation. So circumstances, and this is going to sound like I'm repeating myself, circumstances can change a good act into a bad act. They can change a good act into an even more meritorious act, even mm-hmm. better act, right? And they can change a bad act into an even worse act. They cannot change a bad act into a good act. There is no possibility of that.
Yeah.
Something that's really important when it comes to like intention and circumstances, and this is where like scrupulosity can really get us, is that mixed motives really should not stop us from acting. Mixed motives should not stop, like should not lead to inactivity. It is better to act than to not act. But there is always this spiritual invitation to purify our intentions. So let's take the almsgiving again. And this is going to be kind of like a basic example. But okay, so we've got giving money. We've got kind of this intention of like, I mostly want to give money, but I also kind of want to have my name up there, right? So we're in this like moral gray area. We're not really sure. And the circumstance is that we don't have very much extra money. And it's going to be a really big stretch for us to donate. Let's say it's $1,000 to get your name up on the plaque. It's like, that's a really big stretch.
Yeah.
That might be coloring it into a good moral action, even though there's this mixed motive, right? But it all kind of depends on like the level of, you know, want to give, want to put the name up on the placard, that kind of thing. And the level of like, how much money do we really have? You know, these right. are things, they're so nuanced that it's actually very hard for external humans to actually evaluate human action. Yeah. This is something you kind of have to do on your own and be honest with yourself. And the only person who can truly evaluate human action is Jesus Christ.
Right.
And that's what this is basically, this is the process he's going through.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. when we die, we're going to walk through everything we've done. Right. And yeah. it's going to be explained to us. Or maybe not. I don't know. You know,
yeah. or maybe I don't know, just get a hairy eyeball.
yeah. I don't know about that. But okay, so we take kind of that same situation, giving money. We've got, you know, kind of want to get our name up on the plaque, but also like definitely want to give money. And $1,000 is just like a blip in the amount of money that we have, right? I don't know. You know, that might be coloring it more in the direction of morally bad. But again, it all kind of depends on the levels
right.
of things. Okay. A little bit more. And I know we're getting like toward the end of the episode.
It's okay. This is an important discussion.
This is really important because I know if we stopped here, people would be like, but what about the principle of double effect?
Literally Ellen? What I was going to say. You're okay. reading minds.
All right. So the principle of double effect can only be applied when a certain action, which is morally good or neutral, has two effects or consequences, one that is good and intended, and one that is bad, but merely foreseen, but not intended.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take the very obvious example of what is it called? When the pregnancy happens in the Philippians. Thank you. Ectopic mm-hmm. pregnancy. All right. So I think a lot of people might not know how removing an ectopic pregnancy works. And this is how the double effect process works in the ectopic pregnancy. So an ectopic – I can't even say this word.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Ectopic pregnancy happens when the egg embeds itself in the fallopian tube instead of moving all the way down to embed itself in the endometrial lining. Mm-hmm. This kind of pregnancy will result in both mother and child dying. there is no way to bring this pregnancy to full term. It is a tragic thing that happens. That is not to be missed here in this situation. Yeah. This is tragic. Okay. So the way that an ectopic pregnancy is taken care of is nothing is done to the egg, the embryo. Nothing is done to the embryo. If we directly killed the embryo, that would be a morally bad action. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing that you can do, no circumstances whatsoever that can change that action into a morally good action. Killing someone is morally bad.
Yeah.
So the way that an ectopic pregnancy is taken care of, is that actually the fallopian tube is cut on either side of the embryo, and then that part of the fallopian tube is removed and the other part is fused together, kind of stitched. I don't actually know how it works. Maybe a doctor who's listening could chime in on that. And so the action, the moral action here is that we are saving the mother's life by performing surgery on her fallopian tube. Mm-hmm. The intention, the two intentions, or I mean, sorry, the intention is saving the mother's life. The two like effects of this are the mother's life being saved, which is the intention, the intended act. The other unintended act is that the egg will die without proper nutrients when the fallopian tube is removed with the egg inside of it, the egg will die, right? That is the principle of double effect in a nutshell, is that like this morally bad or this bad effect, sorry, happens, but it is completely unintended. And the intended act. So this is why the circumstances and the intention are so important, because the principle of double effect does not come into play if the intention is like taking the pregnancy away. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that is where we again have to pray to purify our intentions, because I mean, and I'm not trying to judge anyone or whatever, but I'm just saying like there could be a situation where it was an unplanned pregnancy and it also ended up being ectopic, and like, you know, there's sort of this like rejoicing in the fact that you're no longer pregnant, I don't know, right? The moral object, evaluating the human action really is so individual in that case. It really only Jesus can judge that. This process of evaluating moral action is something that you can do. Really quick, we'll do one more example of double effect, the pill. These are like the two most common double effect actions. Okay. Mm-hmm. So taking the pill for therapeutic means, meaning that you're taking it for a medical reason. We don't need to get into why that's probably not necessary in like basically every case. But primary intention is taking it for medical reasons. The secondary, like the effect of it, is infertility. And so, you know, that's the principle of double effect. Now, this one gets even harder to stay morally good, because, you know, not wanting a pregnancy is a very common intention for people. It's a very common want for people to not want a pregnancy at a certain point. And so you have to be very, very careful in a situation like that of really what is your intention, and ask God to help you purify your intention. You know, there's ways to kind of help to purify your intention. Like if you're utilizing the pill for therapeutic means, you know, you can kind of use the rhythm method to avoid intercourse during like a defined, you know, 10 to 14 days or something like that. You know, there's kind of there's ways to help purify your intentions as well. But yeah, it's so personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's very, very true.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, we've already talked for like 29 minutes.
This is good, though. This is like, I think that this is a really important thing that, I mean, this is an area where there are so many questions, right? Where we have like, well, what, like you said in the beginning, why can't the church define these, like, you know, this is okay and this is not, right? And it is because of these reasons. Mm-hmm. But the beautiful thing is that we can take these reasons, extrapolate them, and apply them to our own lives and our own situations and our own relationships and experiences. And, you know, like, with knowledge is power. And mm-hmm. I think that's, we don't always have, this isn't something that a lot of people like realize they could even look up, right? That the church even has right. this like three-step process. So putting it out there, though, this was sort of like a very technically heavy episode, a little right. less conversational. You just came to class. Yeah, I came to class, like, right? Like, it was a little less conversational and more like educational. It's still important for all of us to understand that when you have those questions that you're just sort of like upset that the church doesn't already have an answer to, you can find that answer, right? Like, mm-hmm. by taking this three-step process and applying it. So, knowledge is power. Ignorance is not bliss, right? Like, let's
yeah. kind of we didn't even get into vincible and invincible ignorance. Like, that is a whole other topic.
We'll save it for another time, friends. Don't
maybe
worry.
Another episode. On that, I think we're gonna close out. But yeah, super heavy as far as like technical knowledge. But yeah, I hope that was really helpful for you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening. If you are not already following us on Instagram, be sure to check us out at Charting Toward Intimacy. And if you listen to podcasts on a platform that gives you the option to rate or review, we'd love for you to do that because it helps us spread the word about the podcast. If you ever have questions, comments, or episode topic ideas, please reach out to us. We love to hear from you. You can reach out on Instagram or send us an email. Our email is in the show notes. Until next time.